Welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday the 7th of April 2026. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Mandy Wood and Leslie Court and read by David Field and Leslie Court. This week's edition was compiled by me, David Field. The copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:25 and sunset is at 10 to 8. And a few on-this-day items. On this day, in 1739, Dick Turpin was executed in England for horse-stealing. In 1770, William Wordsworth was born. In 1948, the World Health Organization was founded. And in 1968, riots continue in over 100 American cities following the assassination of Martin Luther King, Jr. And another birthday, in 1969, it was the Internet's symbolic birth date. The very first Request for Comments, or RFC1, was issued by Steve Crocker.
A school has wrapped up a month-long celebration of cultural festivals, bringing together pupils, families and staff. Wood Farm Primary School in Headington enjoyed a packed month of activities, marking Holi, Eid, Easter and World Book Day as part of its ethos as a world school that embraces inclusivity and celebrates difference. Children took part in events and lessons designed not only to broaden cultural understanding, but also to celebrate what makes each person unique. The month began with Holi, the Hindu festival of colour and spring, with children and staff dressed in their brightest clothes. Classrooms and corridors were adorned with colourful flags, Bollywood music and dancing filled the hallways, and each child was given a daffodil to take home. A local resident later told staff how a Wood Farm pupil had given her their flower on the bus journey home. Eid was next, with pupils leading many of the activities by sharing personal reflections about the festival and helping guide discussions on themes such as generosity and gratitude. Each class prepared food to share and families were invited in to join the celebrations. Pari Kershed, a teaching assistant, said, "The Eid celebration was treated with genuine care and respect. As a Muslim member of staff, it meant so much to see every child and adult involved. It showed how diverse and strong our Wood Farm community is." Gemma Cadle, whose child Jimmy is in year one, said it's wonderful that the children learn about and celebrate different cultures. "Coming from a traveller background, it's PPA really important to us that our children appreciate all cultures. My sons have loved celebrating Eid, Holi and Easter this month and are already looking forward to more." Older pupils spoke about how much they enjoyed learning from each other. Milena, age 10, said, "I liked Eid, Holi and Easter because we could all be together, share food and learn how our friends celebrate." Easter was marked with creative crafts and lessons exploring the Christian meaning behind the festival. Mariam, also 10, said the focus on truly listening to one another made the experience especially meaningful. She said, "People were really listening to me." Children and staff were encouraged to wear special clothes for each festival, whether their favourite outfits or traditional dress. Deputy Head Teacher Hannah Barton said, "These celebrations show what being a world school really means for us, a connected and beautiful, diverse community built on kindness, generosity and shared learning. Seeing children, families and staff learning side by side has been incredibly special."
The Cutslow Walls. Last week, that's March the 30th to April the 3rd, Radio 4's quarter hour post-lunch time slot at 1:45 to 2 featured the Cutslow Walls. It was one of Polly Weston's The Patch series, where she selects randomly a postcode, then researches the area for curiosities, unusual events, sites, and so on. OX7, OX8 were the week's postcodes and the Cutslow Walls the chosen focus. Interest was particularly on what happened after the walls came down. In the Shadow of the Walls was the series title. But what were the walls? Why were they built? Why did they come down? There were two walls, brick-built, to a height of 6 to 9 feet, that's just over 2 metres to nearly 3 metres, with revolving spikes set on top. They were built because of one man, Clive Sexton, owner of a private development company, the Urban Housing Company. He'd bought land at Cutslow, North Oxford, to build a housing estate, but having heard that the council were to build a council estate on adjacent land, reasoned that his houses wouldn't sell if buyers discovered they'd be living next to so-called slum dwellers. They'd be neighbours. So, in 1934, Clive Sexton built two walls to prevent council tenants having access to his development. One wall divided Carlton Road from Wolseley Road, and the other Wentworth Road from Aldwych Road. In fact, the council tenants fitted in well, and some raised a petition asking for the walls to be demolished. Opposition grew. Abe Lazarus, a communist politician, took up their cause. He called himself Bill Firestone because he once led a successful strike at the Firestone Rubber Company. He put on a pantomime in which he even played the part of the good fairy. However, residents doubted whether the interference of a left-wing politician would help their cause. In 1936, Lazarus and his supporters marched on the walls with pickaxes. The police barred their way and the attempt failed. In June 1938, the City Council, against legal advice, took the law into their own hands and demolished the wall with a steamroller. Sued by the company and severely criticised by the judge, the city was forced to rebuild the walls. During World War II, there were various attempts to have the walls demolished for safety reasons, but these failed. A tank on a practice exercise did drive through the walls, but the War Office had to pay for the rebuilding. In 1953, councils were given powers of compulsory purchase, and the council adopted them in 1955. Finally, on March the 9th, 1959, after the city had purchased the land the walls were built on, the walls came down. Councillor Edmund Gibbs, son of an earlier demonstrator and chairman of the City Estates Committee, took a ceremonial swipe with a pickaxe to the top of the wall, and it began to fall. When the official party left, Councillor Gibbs waited for the demolition to be completed and then walked through the gap, the first person to do so. On March the 9th, 2006, having applied to the Oxford Civic Society and Blue Plaques Board, a one-time council house tenant at Cutslow unveiled a blue plaque on a former council house in Aldwych Road, where the wall stood. It read, "Here stood one of the two Cutslow walls, erected in 1934 and finally demolished on March the 9th, 1959. It was seen as a commemoration and celebration of the divisive, notorious walls, often referred to as snob walls."
Original plans for Blenheim Palace have been discovered, which include a proposed Roman-style spa bath. The design, drawn up in 1705 by architect Sir John Vanbrugh, was intended for the site now occupied by the Orangery at the Oxfordshire Palace. Vanbrugh's early 18th century sketches reveal that the area near the Flagstaff Gate was meant to become a thermae bathing house for the Duke of Marlborough, but the plan was ultimately abandoned due to high engineering costs. The plans were discovered by archivists and the Built Heritage team at Blenheim. Kelly O'Driscoll, head of Built Heritage at Blenheim Palace, said, "During our vital restoration project, we've been closely examining the original plans for the palace and were intrigued to make this discovery." A brewery social enterprise in Oxford has announced its first ever Oxford-Cambridge Oat Race will be hosted to rival the traditional boat race on the same day. With a tradition stretching back 137 years, the Oxford versus Cambridge boat race is nothing to be trifled with, but a light-hearted parody by Tap Social is giving it a shot. The hospitality organisation, which runs a popular tap room in Botley, several bars and a bakery, announced it would host the first annual varsity contest involving carrying a sack of oats across the city. "This is a light-hearted take on the Oxford-Cambridge rivalry like you've never seen before," said TAP social events manager Harry Housen. "It's also an opportunity to highlight our supply chain, the incredible products TAP social make that utilise the mighty oat, and to work with our partner at the brilliant Minor Figures, a plant-based B Corp certified barista oat supplier." On race day, two competitors, one representing Oxford and one representing Cambridge, were to race against the clock, carrying a big sack of oats across Oxford to the finish line. Starting in Kennington, the racers were to continue with a stop at the Market Tap in Oxford's historic Covered Market, before finishing at Tap Social's Botley Tap Room. Spectators were invited to cheer the runners on as they raced from Proof Social Bakehouse up the River Thames to the Market Tap, where they were to make a quick stop before sprinting to the finish line, where Tap Social would be serving up its popular drinks.
In his Memory Lane column this week, John Chipperfield tells how a one-legged firefighter tackled a fire at Didcot Station in 1886. Firefighters are always admired for the work they do, but one was exceptionally brave. He fought a blaze on one leg. His wooden leg fell off as he raced to the scene. Despite his handicap, he refused to give up and continued battling the fire with his fellow crew members. The blaze occurred at Didcot Railway Station 140 years ago, just before 1 p.m. on March the 31st, 1886. Didcot was then a village, with no firefighting equipment and no piped water. An account of the incident by S. Arnold Warner reads, "The Harwell Fire Brigade appeared on the scene to reinforce the efforts of station staff and villagers who, with water from the wells of nearby hotels and the water cart from Blagrave Farm, were doing their best to check the flames. The Harwell engine, brought on a wagon and drawn by horses, was manned by a team of 6 to 8 men. One member of the team had a wooden leg, and this, not being securely fastened, fell off during the hasty journey over the uneven roads, and its owner was seen hopping around on one leg when at length the pump got to work. Crews from Wallingford and Abingdon arrived to help, and members of the Oxford Volunteer Fire Brigade took their fire engine and truck, known as Gamecock, to Oxford Station, loaded them onto a wagon, and travelled to Didcot on the railway line. Details of the fire and the heroic one-legged man were uncovered by historian and retired fire officer John Lowe, who lives in Kidlington. A subsequent investigation found that the fire started when an employee holding an oil lamp near a fire in one of the station waiting rooms accidentally spilt some of the oil. Jackson's Oxford Journal reported, "The fire rapidly ignited the oil, and before he had time to take action, the flames were roaring up the chimney. The chimney caught fire, and it ran out through the telegraph office." The alarm had been raised after the bookstall clerk and an inspector noticed an unusual amount of smoke on the platform. In minutes, the wooden roof was on fire, and flames spread rapidly throughout the building. The newspaper report continued, "The station master and inspectors, with great promptness, set to work in organising the men, but it was soon seen that their efforts would be useless. Meanwhile, a telegram had been sent to Oxford, and the splendid fire engine was brought down the railway line and immediately set to work. The Harwell engine, too, arrived early, and subsequently there came the fire engines from Wallingford and Abingdon. All were brought to bear on the burning mass. It was soon clear that it would be impossible to save the station offices, but the firemen, one and all, worked with a will and succeeded in saving valuable property. Passengers with their luggage gathered in safe corners of the station. Freight trains were halted, but most passenger trains continued to run using a loop line." The newspaper added, "The fire continued unabated until early evening. The flames could be seen for miles around."
A mile-long celebration of sport, youth and community spirit will return to Oxford this May. The Bannister Community Mile will take place on May the 4th, transforming central Oxford into a course for runners of all ages and abilities. Named in honour of Sir Roger Bannister, the first man to run a sub-4-minute mile, the event aims to inspire broad participation in sport and encourage healthier lifestyles across the community. Dr. Gordon Sanghera of the Sanghera Foundation, this year's sponsor, said, "The Sanghera Foundation is honoured to support the 2026 Bannister Community Mile. We believe in the power of sport to transform lives and strengthen communities. By sponsoring entry fees for local students, we hope to foster a lasting culture of physical activity and confidence among Oxford's youth. The event is closely linked with the Oxford Young Sports Leaders Programme, an initiative led since 2023 by the University of Oxford's SDG Lab, with backing from Vincent's Club and athlete volunteers from the Oxford University Cross Country Club. The programme works with more than 60 Year 8 pupils each year from six Oxford State Secondary Schools, promoting the value of sport for academic success and physical, mental and social well-being. With support from the Sangera Foundation, 30 free places have been made available for each of the participating schools. Professor Alexander Betts, Pro Vice Chancellor, Oxford Local and Global Engagement, said, "The Bannister Miles is a shining example of how the university can work in partnership with the city to promote health, well-being and community spirit. We are committed to ensuring our sports facilities are inclusive and accessible. Seeing the high street filled with residents of all ages, from school children to families, perfectly captures our vision for local engagement." Organised by the Oxford University Cross Country Club, Bannister Miles has grown into an annual celebration of athletics, featuring a morning community mile and afternoon track races. More than 1,500 people participate in the community mile, including children, families, and even some participants who witnessed Bannister's historic run in 1954. The Bannister Track Miles, held at the iconic Iffley Road track, include races for all ages and abilities, from para 1500 metre events to elite men's and women's mile races. The men's race begins at 6 p.m, marking the exact time of Bannister's sub-4-minute mile 72 years ago. This year's event is supported by Steve Cram's Events for the North, part of a long-term plan to establish it as the premier mile racing event in the UK ahead of the 75th anniversary of Bannister's achievement in 2029. Registration and further details are available at bannistermiles.org.uk.
Active travel campaigners say Oxford's congestion charge is delivering positive results for the city. It's been 5 months since the £5 daily fee to drive through 6 points into the city was introduced, ahead of traffic filters after the Botley Road scheme is finally completed. And data from Oxford Bus Company suggests passenger numbers are up by around 8% year on year. Oxfordshire County Council data also indicates faster journeys by bus, increased park and ride use, and improvement to city centre traffic. However, some of the outer roads of the city centre are showing more traffic. Hannah Kirby, co-chair of the Coalition of Healthy Streets and Active Travel, or COHSAT, has argued that because more people are walking, cycling, or taking the bus into the city centre, footfall is up too. She said, "The temporary congestion charge continues to deliver positive results, allowing buses to move quicker and making the roads safer for people who walk and cycle. Because so many more people walk, cycle or bus to the centre than drive, it is no wonder that Oxford's footfall is up compared to other places in the UK which are suffering. Many of us take the active option because we enjoy the freedom. But the sheer economy of walking, cycling or Oxford's discount bus fares make them very good options against rising fuel prices as well." Legal challenges have been launched against the County Council for the congestion charge by Open Roads for Oxford Limited. And on Wednesday, March the 25th, the High Court said that taking the case forward would have no chance of success in ruling the congestion charge was illegal. Open Roads for Oxford Limited said in response, "The fight is not over." Siobhan Mansell-Pladel from Oxfordshire Liverpool Streets said, "This ruling is affirmation of the strong groundwork that Oxfordshire County Council has put into the congestion charge scheme. The scheme is already providing congestion and health benefits and a fairer transport system that relies less on expensive private cars. We'd like to see that extended, with some of the funding targeted to address inequalities, for example, extending free child travel on all bus services and improving access low-cost active travel, by improving pavements, cycle parking, and micro-mobility availability across the city and beyond. These initiatives will help the most financially disadvantaged in difficult economic times. Labour has called for discounted bus travel from the income received by the congestion charge, which is currently funding a free bus ride on the Park and Ride. Oxford is the second most expensive place to have a stag do or a hen party, research suggests. Only being beaten by London, the average price for a hotel room per night is £215, according to analysis by a consumer finance expert. The research also found that a one-way ticket on Oxford's public transport will cost approximately £3, while a 10-kilometre taxi journey costs around £24. The expert said, despite having expensive accommodation and transport prices, Oxford does offer bottomless brunch for an average of £34 per person, in line with some of the cheapest destinations in the ranking. You can expect to pay around £6.75 for a pint of beer in Oxford, the most expensive on the list. A supermarket bottle of wine will set you back an average of £8.30. Blackpool, Chester and Sheffield all top the list for the cheapest places to celebrate ahead of a wedding. Joe Brunt, a consumer finance expert at Fast Loan UK, said that booking early, travelling off-peak or midweek, and prioritising key activities would reduce costs. He said, there are now countless fun activities available for hen and stag parties, from go-karting and paintballing to bottomless brunches and brewery or distillery tours.
Oxford University has welcomed a record 3.8 million tourists in the last year, according to figures released by the Association of Leading Visitor Attractions, that's ALVA. Together, Oxford University's gardens, libraries and museums, GLAM, that's GLAM, welcomed 3.8 million people in 2025, compared to 3.5 million in 2024. Those are rough figures. This is the highest number of visitors on record and represents a 7% increase year on year, outperforming ALVA's UK-wide average figure of 2%. GLAM is made up of four museums: the Ashmolean Museum of Art and Archaeology, History of Science Museum, the Oxford University Museum of Natural History, and Pitt Rivers Museum, as well as the Oxford Botanic Garden and Arboretum and the Bodleian Libraries. Out of 400 organisations which submitted data, four GLAM venues were among ALVA's top 100 most visited attractions in 2024. The Ashmolean Museum secured its highest ever ranking at number 31 and is now the most popular visitor attraction in Oxfordshire. The Bodleian Libraries and Oxford University Museum of Natural History placed 37th and 40th respectively, both equaling their highest ranking. The Pitt Rivers Museum was 85th following 2 years of exceptional visitor growth. Oxford Botanic Garden and Arboretum ranked at number 188 and the History of Science Museum at 205. Richard Ovenden, OBE, head of Oxford's Gardens, Libraries and Museums, said, "This latest increase in ALVA visitor figures not only reflects the popularity of the university's unique venues and the rich treasures contained in them, but also demonstrates how our GLAM teams truly understand how to attract, include, engage and interact with our visitors, whether from our local communities or across the globe." With an exciting programme of exhibitions, displays and events scheduled for this year, we look forward to welcoming even more visitors to our gardens, libraries and museums and continue to enjoy sharing the stories behind our collections with them. In 2025, the Ashmolean Museum held its hugely popular music exhibition, This Is What You Get, Stanley Donwood, Tom York, Radiohead, inspired by the local band. The Ashmolean's visitors increased by 14% in 2025 to over 1 million, its highest figure since 2010, and the first time the museum has achieved 1 million visitors since reopening in 2009. The Bodleian Libraries were enjoyed by 929,000 visitors in 2025, up 7% on the year. The History of Science Museum saw a 9% boost in visitors through their doors in 2025, totaling 195,000, a remarkable 31% increase on their pre-pandemic 2019 figure. The Museum of Natural History greeted 877,000 visitors last year, over 50,000 more than in 2024, and its highest figure ever.
Closure of a popular Oxfordshire zoo has been described as the end of an era by its founder and owner as it shuts down operations after nearly 50 years. Heathrop Zoo near Enston, close to Chipping Norton, which trades as Amazing Animals, announced this week that it will shut down at the end of the month. Setting up one of the UK's largest trainers and suppliers of animals to the film and TV industry was the dream of owner and co-founder Jim Clubb, who set up the business in 1977 with his wife, Sally. Mr. Clubb said, "It's difficult talking about it because obviously it's a very sad thing for us all. We made the decision about 2 years ago as I'm retiring, as my son doesn't want to continue with it, which I can quite understand, as it was always my dream from the beginning." Mr. and Mrs. Clubb both came from animal training backgrounds and set up Amazing Animals for animal training about 10 years before Heathrop Zoological Gardens was built. A custom-built film set location, the Clubs built Heathrop Zoo in 1988 for TV and film productions in Europe, and since then the business supplied animals for major productions like the Harry Potter series, Mission Impossible, The Mummy Returns, Stardust Nativity, and Sweeney Todd. The last production filmed at Heathrop Zoo was the upcoming latest release from director Christopher Nolan, Odyssey, for which Amazing Animals supplied a tiger, leopard and black panther. Now, though all of the animals have been found new homes, with the last few leaving the zoo next week, in a process that has taken 2 years. Mr. Clubb said, "Some have gone to new homes locally, lots of them to other collections or zoos with people who have had animals from us before. Many of them are not too far away, so we can go and visit them if we want to. After all these years, it's a very sad occasion for us. Amongst the staff, we find it really difficult to talk too much about it. It's the end of an era." The five-decade enterprise has been a real achievement for the owner, but he explained that business was crippled by the pandemic, which exacerbated the decline of using real animals in film amid improved CGI and special effects. Taking animals on the road to care homes and schools was one of the highlights for the owner, who said the visits have been an enormous part of it. Heathrop Zoo has helped staff move on to other jobs in the industry, many of them locally, and Mr. Clubb said his fascination with exotic animal species will continue for life. "I'm still keeping a collection of reptiles and tropical fish," he said, "so that's my hobby interest, so I won't be without animals completely. I'm sure I won't be without animals for the rest of my life."
A former bike shop in Oxford city centre could become a cafe as plans are submitted by a hotel group to transform the listed building. Bike Zone in St Michael Street closed in December 2024 after 14 years of trading, to the great disappointment of the city's cyclists. More than a year after its closure, the fate of the premises, which occupies the ground floor unit at number 26, directly below the popular brunch spot, the Handlebar, remained uncertain when an application to turn it into hotel accommodation was withdrawn. Now, hotel group Galaxy Hotels Limited has submitted fresh plans to turn the Grade 2 listed building into a cafe. The hotel group operates the Galaxy Boutique Hotel in Banbury Road, Summertown, and the Nettie in St Giles, luxury accommodation in a former underground public toilet. Galaxy Hotels Limited's latest project is for the Red Brick Shop in St Michael's, the rear part of which is the remains of a bastion of the city wall, and which was added to the Heritage Register in 1972. No works affecting the fabric of the building are proposed for the transformation into a cafe, and the applicant said the removal of an internal partition had already been approved in a previous application. The application said the proposed cafe use is appropriate for the commercial character of St Michael Street and is consistent with the established pattern of ground floor activity in the area.
Spring has arrived at Blenheim Palace with a packed programme of events and activities on offer. The return of warmer weather has transformed the estate's gardens into a seasonal showcase of blossoms and fresh growth, setting the stage for a busy calendar of family-friendly events and attractions. The Easter extravaganza, running from April the 3rd to the 6th, will feature circus skills workshops, traditional fairground rides, and live animal shows. In addition to the extravaganza, the annual jousting tournament returns from May the 2nd to the 4th, bringing medieval pageantry and action to the grounds. The Blenheim Palace Food Festival will take place from May the 23rd to the 25th and promises celebrity chefs, culinary demonstrations and a range of food and drink stalls. A major interactive exhibition, Blueprints of Power, is now open and explores the life of Blenheim's designer, Sir John Vanbrugh. The Blenheim Palace Flower Show runs from June the 19th to the 21st and will include garden displays, horticultural inspiration and activities for all ages. Younger visitors can enjoy the adventure play area with zip lines, tunnels and climbing structures, as well as the Pip and Posy Rainbow Treasure Hunt, inspired by the popular preschool series. Access to the formal gardens and parkland is included with a Palace Park and Gardens ticket or with a Palace and Play Pass, which offers repeat entry for a full year. Andy Mills, Blenheim's head gardener, is drawing on the garden's extensive heritage to bring rediscovered treasures to the forefront for visitors. The gardens are currently awash with more than 70,000 daffodils, with displays on the south lawn, throughout the arboretum, and near the new rockery by the water terraces. Secret Garden has also been refreshed for the season and now features a new living willow tunnel, while the recently planted Cherry Avenue guides visitors toward the Rose Garden. This area is being restored with 8,000 spring alliums and will eventually be home to 200 period rose varieties in 2027. Crabapple trees have also been planted to create a seasonal blossom corridor between the Rose Garden and the Temple of Flora. The 18th century walled garden's kitchen garden has doubled in size and is on track for full self-sufficiency by 2027. Elsewhere, the potager garden will feature colourful pumpkins, squashes and a border of bold, fiery blooms later in the season. The Palace and Play Pass costs £165 for a family of four. Individual day passes are £51 per adult and £41 per child.
Police were called to the banks of the Thames after what is believed to have been a Second World War artillery shell was pulled from the water. The suspected explosive was removed from the river by Dion Powell while he was magnet fishing with friends in Abingdon. After finding the shell, Mr. Powell from Barton in Oxford called the police, who rushed to the scene at around 6 p.m, closing off a section of Wilsham Road. Officers cordoned off an area between Wharf Close and Saxton Road with army explosives, experts believed to have been called to remove the item. Mr. Powell had been magnet fishing alongside the river from around 2 p.m. Having already discovered a double-barreled shotgun and a gem rifle from the late 19th century, he then pulled out the vintage explosive item. "It was an awesome find, but it was scary. It really was quite spooky," he said. As it was potentially live, Mr. Powell called the police and photographed the item, which was reported to be a 57mm anti-tank round used during the Second World War. District and County Councillor Neil Fawcett was in the neighbourhood at the time, at the Old Anchor Inn. He said, "I heard a report that Wilsham Road was closed due to a potential unexploded bomb that some magnet fishers found. He urged people to avoid the area." He reported loads of blue lights at around 7 p.m. in Abingdon. Mr. Fawcett complimented the force on how it had handled the situation. The Liberal Democrat councillor said, "I'm very impressed by the speed of the response by police. I hope the bomb isn't going to be a big problem. They are doing a very professional job keeping local people safe." This isn't the first time this year that the bomb squad has been summoned after fines by magnet fishermen. An area of Osney Mead was cordoned off after suspected unexploded bombs were found on February the 22nd. Several police cars were pictured at the estate off Botley Road, along with a bomb disposal unit. On that occasion, a local fisherman said the items were found in the River Thames at Osney Mead. Sky Maze, the adventure playground at Cotswold Wildlife Park, has reopened after a complete rebuild. The relaunch came just in time for the Easter holidays and coincides with the park's 56th anniversary. After being fully modernised, the playground now offers an immersive experience across three levels of interconnected treehouses. The project was delivered in partnership with playground specialists Capco and the park's own grounds team. Paul Edwards, head of grounds at Cotswold Wildlife Park and Gardens, said, "As you may know, the original Sky Maze was built 12 years ago. After a decade of immense popularity and heavy use, the structure had begun to deteriorate. The decision was made to completely rebuild it from the ground up, designing a future-proof version of the much-loved adventure playground. Over the next few months, with invaluable consultation with ROSPA, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, we collaborated closely with Capco, the company that constructed our original Sky Maze, and plans started to emerge. Sky Maze features wooden walkways, rope bridges, crawl tunnels, slides, climbing walls, and a wonky walkway. The revamped playground is the biggest investment the park has made in its play facilities." Mr. Edwards said, "With the designs finalised, we scheduled the demolition of the old Sky Maze and reconstruction of the new one to take place during winter, ensuring the project would be completed in time for the Easter holidays. A huge undertaking. Disposing of the old Sky Maze was a mammoth task on its own. Our grounds team, alongside Capco, worked tirelessly to complete the work in time. The new Sky Maze is constructed using more than 600 pieces of timber and 120 Robinia structural poles, each set 1 metre deep in concrete." Mr. Edwards said, "After months of intense building, the new Sky Maze is now complete. We are sure the updated version will be enjoyed for many years to come. We hope you enjoy the new upgrade." The playground, on the same site since the park opened in 1970, first featured a slide bought from Burford Primary School. Through the 1970s and 80s, a handmade Trojan horse was the main attraction. While the original swings remain in place, they only the chains and seats have been replaced. The highest point of the new Sky Maze is a viewing platform more than 20 feet high. For younger visitors, the nearby Mini Manor offers slides, a mini zip wire, and interconnected treehouses. Cotswold Wildlife Park is open daily from 10 a.m. with last admission at 4 p.m. During winter, last entry is at 3 p.m.
Gardeners World star Monty Don has named a threatened North Oxfordshire garden among the very best in the UK. The broadcaster and author selects some outstanding British gardens he has visited, which are featured in his new book, British Gardens. He looks at the great and the good, the private and the public, the subtleties and the wow factor of some of our outstanding gardens and all they have to offer. One of Mr. Don's picks is Rousham, near Bicester. "This is one of the greatest gardens ever made," he said. "It's a landscape garden and is undoubtedly the finest survival of the landscape movement, better than any of Capability Brown's gardens. It was made in the 1730s, whereas Brown didn't start working till a quarter of a century later, and is pretty much unchanged. No change could improve it. It is open to the public, but very eccentrically. There's a big sign saying, 'No dogs, no children under 15, which some people get very cross about, but you take it as it is. It's entirely evergreen, with lots of statues and water. Mr. Don and fellow gardener Alan Titchmarsh previously warned the proposed Hayford Park development could spoil the garden, saying the scheme risks causing significant irreparable damage to one of the greatest gardens in the world. The broadcasters joined Lord Smith of Finsbury, Sarah Raven, the gardener, Tom Stuart Smith, the garden designer, Ian Wilson, the writer, and Charles Sir Maurice Smith, the historian, in raising concerns about proposals for the 9,000-home development. In a letter to the Times, the signatory said the project would be visible from important vantage points within the historic gardens of Rousham House, a Grade 1 registered park and garden described as completely unspoilt and uncommercialised. They said at the scale proposed, the development risks causing significant and irreparable damage to one of the greatest gardens in the world. The group urged Cherwell District Council, Historic England and the government to place robust constraints on the development to protect the setting of the historic estate. Mr. Don has travelled the world from the Arctic Circle to the Australian outback visiting gardens.
A rock legend helped Harry Potter star Emma Watson with an issue. The 35-year-old is studying at Oxford University in the city where she grew up, having opted to study a master's degree in creative writing in 2023. It was announced last year that Ms. Watson had switched to a DPhil while on her acting break, and she previously had studied at two local schools, the Dragon School and Headington School. The actress is well known for her iconic role as Hermione Granger in all eight of the Harry Potter films, released from 2001 to 2011. In a report by Far Out, it has been said that rock legend Patti Smith helped Ms. Watson with an issue in the past. The American singer, who has been labelled by critics and fans as the godmother of punk, played a show at Oxford New Theatre back in September 2024. Far Out reports that Mrs. Smith gave Ms. Watson some advice about dealing with press attention. The actress previously told Variety, she, Patti Smith, said I needed to find a way to block out the noise. Mrs. Smith is said to have been impressed that the Harry Potter star managed to ignore any attention despite being in a crowded space. The 79-year-old was referring to a previous gig of hers, which Ms. Watson attended, revealing the actress had managed to enjoy it. I was interested that despite everyone watching her, she still managed to dance and interact with her friend that night, as any girl her age might, said Mrs. Smith previously.
Home Thoughts from Abroad. One of Britain's favourite poems, Robert Browning wrote this in 1845 in northern Italy. Oh, to be in England, now that April's there, and whoever wakes in England sees some morning unaware that the lowest boughs and the brushwood sheaf round the elm tree bole are in tiny leaf, while the chaffinch sings on the orchard bough in England now. And after April, when May follows and the white-throat builds and all the swallows, hark where my blossomed pear tree in the hedge leans to the field and scatters on the clover blossoms and dewdrops at the bent spray's edge. That's the wise thrush. He sings each song twice over, lest you should think he never could recapture the first fine, careless rapture. And though the fields look rough with hoary dew, all will be gay when noontide wakes anew. The buttercups, the little children's dower, far brighter than this gaudy melon flower.
Oxford Speedway has broken its silence after national reports revealed that Oxford Stadium would soon close following a broadcaster pulling out. Sports broadcaster Sports Information Services is to stop covering racing at Oxford Stadium on Sandy Lane in a move described as disastrous to Greyhound Racing. According to the Racing Post, SIS confirmed it would drop Oxford and Suffolk Downs from its schedule from Monday 6th of April, effectively ending operations at both tracks under its service. In a statement announcing what it called a streamlining and rationalisation of Greyhound content, SIS said the decision came as the betting industry braces for changes to betting duty and taxation set out in the autumn budget. Now, Oxford Speedway promoter Jamie Courtney has now reassured Cheetahs fans in light of the announcement. "I want to confirm that the SD Timo Car Sales Oxford Cheetahs will be here next Wednesday evening to start our BSN Series campaign against the Plymouth Gladiators," he said. "The stadium needs both Speedway and Greyhounds to be financially viable in the long term, but Mr. Courtney has encouraged Speedway fans to remain positive."
Next generation travellers shape future of railways. Young people are helping shape the future of the railways through a growing focus on inclusion and creativity. Community rail projects have earned national recognition at the 2026 Community Rail Awards. The projects, led by the Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire Community Rail Partnership, or GOCRP, and the Gloucestershire CRP, receive one first place and two second place awards for initiatives that engage underrepresented groups to improve rail transport and travel confidence. The Youth Transport Forum took first place in the Involving Children and Young People category. Hannah McDonnell, Executive Director of the Gloucester and Oxford Group, said, "Young people are the next generation of rail travellers, and they told us exactly what they need to travel with confidence. We gave them the tools to turn that into evidence that decision makers and our industry partners can consider and, where possible, act on. Having these projects recognised is really significant to us and demonstrates the importance nationally of ensuring more voices are heard and that confidence is built where it is most needed." 11 young delegates from Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire took part in workshops to identify barriers to public transport and propose solutions such as better bus and cycle connections and targeted travel education. Their work informed the 2025 Youth Transport Report, which is now being used by regional and industry partners. The Gloucestershire and Oxford Group said its next phase would focus on supporting young people who might not yet have the travel confidence to access jobs and work experience. Great Western Railway Senior Community Impact Manager Emma Morris said, "We're incredibly proud of the work the two groups have delivered across Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire. Their projects continue to demonstrate the real impact of community rail partnerships, and it was fantastic to see them receive such well-deserved recognition at the Rail Awards 2026. Second place in the Empowering Diverse Groups category went to the Exploring LGBTQIA+ Gloucestershire project, which documented their experience of public transport through stories, mapping and surveys. The project culminated in an exhibition at Cheltenham Station during Pride Month and a travel needs report. The stories and resources are now archived at Gloucestershire Heritage Hub. The Gloucester Group also earned second place for most effective communications campaign with The Story Express, a collaboration with Aurora Children's Theatre, funded by Cross Country Trains. The project saw 27 young people develop geolocated audio stories to accompany a real train journey between Cam and Dursley and Ashchurch for Tewkesbury.
Dozens of charities are in the running for a high-profile prize worth £100,000. 71 organisations across Oxfordshire have been nominated for the 2026 Brand the Bus competition, which will see one charity's branding take over an electric Oxford bus company double-decker for a full year. Now in its eighth year, the scheme is organised by Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel, with public voting currently open. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel, said, "We're really pleased to have received nominations from a wide range of fantastic causes across Oxfordshire. The sheer number of entrants and interest in Brand the Bus this year demonstrates the scope of the competition and the positive impact it can have on local organisations. Brand the Bus continues to build and grow year on year, and we're incredibly proud of what it continues to achieve. The public can cast votes until April the 30th, with the 10 most popular charities progressing to a final judging panel." Mr. Marion said, "If you have a favourite, now is the time to have your say and give that local good cause or charity the best possible chance of making the top 10 and the judging panel." Backed by partners Get Radio and Oxford City Football Club, the competition offers a £100,000 promotional package. The winning charity will receive a year-long full-wrap advertisement on an electric double-decker bus, along with free advertising on all Oxford Bus Company and Thames travel vehicles. Radio advertising on Get Radio is also included, and the winner will become Oxford City's charity of choice for the 2026-27 season. The organisation will also collaborate with Oxford Bus Company to design the bus wrap, which is expected to be unveiled in the autumn. A runner-up prize worth £5,000 will also be awarded, which includes on-bus digital advertising. Last year's winner was children's mental health charity 180. Helen and Douglas House, the world's first children's hospice, was named as the inaugural runner-up. Other past winners include Girl Guiding Oxfordshire, Home Start Oxfordshire, Blue Sky Thinking, Restore, Seesaw and Oxford Hospitals Charity. The judging panel will award prizes to the organisations that, in their opinion, best meet the competition's criteria. Mr. Marion said, "We're now onto the voting phase of this year's competition, with the public having until the end of April to select who they think should be the winner." More details about the competition and the full list of nominees are available at oxfordbus.co.uk/brand-the-bus-2026.
Bicester Food Bank is marking its 20 years of service to the community since it was founded. The food bank started in 2006 when Janet Ray, inspired by her visits to New Zealand, began collecting non-perishable food from 8 local churches, distributing from her garage in Launton. In its first year, it supported less than 1,000 people, but in recent years that figure has almost doubled. However, the food bank has seen an 8% decline attributed to a shortfall of volunteers over the last 5 years. Alison Drake, manager of Bicester Food Bank, said the milestone was bittersweet, and added, "This anniversary isn't just a celebration, it's an opportunity to help our community understand the scale of food insecurity locally. I'm incredibly proud to lead this amazing service that Janet founded, and proud of the compassion our community shows every day. Our work matters, but the truth is people shouldn't have to rely on a food bank in the first place. In the early years, it was a major hurdle to build awareness which would ensure people in crisis knew help was available, while also encouraging people to donate. Practical challenges also included limited storage space, coordinating volunteers, and overcoming stigma, which could only build on trust, time, and strong community relationships. The 10th anniversary was marked by the move to Market Square, a more centrally visible and accessible location. This strengthened relationships with local agencies and partners, making referrals smoother and more coordinated. Recent factors for demand increase has been driven by a combination of economic, social and political factors, including rising bills, changes to the welfare system and the 2008 financial crisis. More than 60% of its users are single adults, with or without children. The biggest challenges faced by those in Bicester include the rising cost of essentials, ongoing physical or mental health conditions, and debt. Miss Drake said, "Every so often someone arrives at the food bank with nothing more than the clothes they're wearing. In those moments we respond with deep care and compassion, making sure they feel safe and supported. Thanks to our incredible network of referral partners across the community, we can act quickly to provide emergency help where it's needed most. We've been told that this response has saved lives." Throughout the year, the food bank will run a handful of fundraising events, from an Easter Sunday party to an Oktoberfest celebration and a special harvest festival service at St. Edberg's Church in the town.
The King has hailed the work of an Oxfordshire company producing the next generation of solar panels as wonderful, but joked about the disaster of his plaque unveiling. Charles toured the headquarters of Oxford PV, Photovoltaics, in Yarnton, which has developed solar panels that are significantly more efficient than conventional products and were described by the King as so vitally needed. The head of state has been championing sustainability and climate action for decades, speaking regularly about the threat to the planet and adopting practical measures like running his Aston Martin car on eco-fuel. He told a group of staff, "I hope you can speed up the transition a bit," an apparent reference to the aim of moving away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. The King added, "I think you're remarkable how you've managed to keep it all going, but it does take time to get to the point where you can actually commercialise all these things. But we need it all badly. All your products, fantastic, applicable on one or two roofs." There was a lighter moment when Charles pulled a sheet to unveil a plaque to mark his visit, quipping disaster after it tumbled to the ground from an easel. He was shown the research and development lab of Oxford PV, founded in 2010 as a spin-out from nearby Oxford University, which has become a world leader in using light-sensitive perovskite to develop solar panels that are over 20% more efficient than conventional panels. He looked at an electron microscope image of the surface of perovskite, a material layered onto silicon solar panels to increase their efficiency at creating electricity as it absorbs different parts of the light spectrum. The King was delayed by around 45 minutes when bad weather forced him to switch from a helicopter to a car for his journey to Oxford, and he joked a number of times about the delay after apologising for being late. When the King was shown images of commercial applications of the advanced solar panels, not yet available to the public, he appeared impressed with the potential use in car manufacturing, aeronautics and satellites. David Ward, chief executive of Oxford PV, said after the visit that the firm was shipping pilot volumes of products to early customers, adding, "There's been a decade of work getting it from a brilliant piece of science into a real module that you see here that we could give to a customer and they put on a roof. I don't think one energy source will dominate all others, but solar right now is the cheapest form of energy generation and deals with security and energy transition."
The story mentioned both on TV and on Radio 4's Farming Today. The Hawkstone Farmers Choir have made a major move after securing Amanda Holden's Britain's Got Talent Golden Buzzer. Originally founded by Jeremy Clarkson in the Cotswolds to advertise his alcohol brand, the group is a collective of real British farmers. The choir appeared on Britain's Got Talent over the weekend on March the 21st and secured a golden buzzer from Amanda Holden during their audition. This rare honour, which sends the 32-strong collective straight through to the live semi-finals, was given following a performance of the Elbow Anthem, One Day Like This, at the Birmingham Hippodrome. Mr. Clarkson was left visibly emotional by the performance as he took to the social media site Instagram to share a raw clip with his instant reaction. "I watched Britain's Got Talent tonight for the first time because the Hawkstone Choir were on, and they were just fantastic," he said, appearing to be close to tears.
A gripping murder mystery, a love story, and a magical adventure have taken the top spots in a storytelling contest. The stories were chosen as this year's winning entries in the Oxfordshire County Council Libraries Services 2026 Short Story Competition and were created by writers from across the county as part of the annual contest. The Oxfordshire County Council Library Service invites people of all ages to share their creativity, and this year's entries showcased exceptional storytelling talent from across the county. Councillor Neil Fawcett, Deputy Leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "Our short story competition is always popular and generates such amazing levels of creativity and engagement. We very much appreciate all the efforts that our local authors go to, and choosing a winner is always a very tough task. Thank you and well done to all our talented writers." In the adult category, Keita Mitchell took the top spot with What We Cover Up, a suspenseful story about two lifelong friends, Tanya and Sandra, whose banter masks a deep loyalty, one that is put to the test when they discover a body in Sandra's garage. Ms. Mitchell said, I was delighted to hear that What We Cover Up had won the competition. I've not written anything for adults before, so it meant a lot, and it's especially nice that the recognition comes from libraries, which are such important places for so many people. I hope everyone enjoys reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. The young adult category was won by 17-year-old Pepper Tomasina for The Willow by the Lake, a poetic tale of forbidden love between a naiad and a dryad whose world is threatened by human encroachment. Ms. Tomasina said, I was in total shock, and I still am, to be honest. Nothing will ever compare to the feeling of being told that you're good at what you love. Stories have always been such a comfort to me, and it makes me so indescribably happy that my story has brought joy to others. In the children's category, 11-year-old Ella Uglow won with I Only Wanted Ice Cream, a wintry adventure that turns an ordinary shopping trip into something magical. Ms. Uglow said, I felt very excited to find out I'd won the competition. It was quite surreal. It feels nice that my story will be shared with other children in Oxfordshire. Thank you. The winning stories are now available to read on the Oxfordshire Library's Overdrive page and through the Libby app.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the talking newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxhawk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.